What a gorgeous Memorial Day weekend we had here in Anchorage. It was a gardener's dream. 3 days of full sun and unusually warm weather. It made getting those seedlings into the garden a joy. Hello, welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Ellen Lockyer, and today we'll be talking about how to get the best out of your backyard vegetable patch, especially when it comes to that rarity in Alaska, good homegrown tomatoes. My guest, Julie Riley, she's a horticulturist and a master gardener with the Anchorage Office of the Cooperative Extension Service, and she will be with us in just a moment. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about what is the difference between a master gardener and a horticulturalist. A lot of us don't know, because there is a distillo, Julie.
Hi, Ellen.
Shaving it down to the last second. That's the kind of person I am, too. She's just joined us. Let's say hello to Julie Riley, and as the aforementioned horticulturalist and master gardener with the Anchorage Office of the Cooperative Extension Service. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me today. Well, I teach the master gardening course.
Mm-hmm.
And in Anchorage, the course is a 40-hour program that is taught in the fall, and people who sign up for it commit to doing 40 hours of volunteer work in areas of in an educational capacity, I guess.
Okay, so I know master gardeners, and I would love to take that course someday, and I never have the time, but one day. But they take the 40 hours of a class, and then they do 40 hours of volunteer.
Yes, I've got master gardeners that are working with the refugee garden group that's going to be selling vegetables at farmers markets. We had master gardeners that went into 50 second grade classrooms with the talking plant. And I've got master gardeners who have given presentations to garden clubs and to school groups. And we're also this summer on Saturdays down at the new farmers market in Spadard at Chilkoot Charlie's under the windmill.
Okay, so what's a horticulturist now?
Well,
you're one of those too.
Well, I'm a horticulturalist, and horticulture is a field of plant science that is applied compared to, you know, hardcore sciences like botany. And horticulturists deal with high value crops.
Mm.
Crops that you can grow in a small acreage or in a greenhouse, and they're things like fruits and vegetables and flowers. Whereas the agronomists work with field crops like barley, wheat, corn. You know, not in Alaska, but. So they're crops that need to be produced at a larger scale. So academically, that's how things get broken down into horticulture and agronomy.
Okay, so I guess that horticulture would be the thing of many of our Alaska gardeners. And I'd like to remind our listeners that Hometown Alaska is a call-in show, so I'm sure many of you out there are interested in today's topic and how to get the most bang out of your garden and the most bang for your buck, because it's a lot of work and there's some money investment in having a home garden. And so you can call in. You can call in at 550-8433. That's 550-8433, or outside of the Anchorage area, 1-888-353-5752. That's 1-888-353-5752. Or email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. And remember, links and all the information regarding today's show can be found at one website address, and that is kska.org. So we're going to talk a little bit about the tricks of the trade, so to speak, about getting really, really, really good vegetables out of your backyard or your small garden. Summer is starting off with a bang, and heat. What is the role that heat plays? I mean, we're always hearing, oh, you can't grow corn in Alaska. You can't grow squash in Alaska. You can't grow this or that in Alaska. But you can grow pretty big zucchinis, but maybe not pumpkins. What? Tell me.
Well, it's the soil and the air. So plants have a specific requirement for they have a certain optimum temperature for the root growth, and also optimum temperatures in the air at nighttime and during the day.
Mm-hmm. So when the soil is warm enough at a certain point below the surface,
that's when you plant. That's when seed germination starts, and that's when plants that are already growing really take off. Mm-hmm. So that's why if you put your zucchini out too early, it doesn't grow. It just sits there. It could be the soil temperature. It could be the air temperature.
Okay. So like over this weekend, I mean a week ago, my trees hadn't budded out. My backyard grass was still sort of matted down and with the wintry look. And now I have a small jungle out there. Inside of a week, it's like the grass is halfway up to my knees. And so yeah. There, it really moves quickly.
Well, it does. And I think this season has gotten a little bit compressed in terms of bloom time for flowers. So just depends how the weather goes. I've been here for 25 years, and every season is different.
Well, gardening here in the North has a really long history. If you look at some of the old photos of old Alaska in the territorial days, you see many photos of people with their really gigantic gardens. And they didn't have rototillers and seeds. Well, they did have seeds, but you know what I'm saying? They did it by hand.
Well, they probably did more collecting of their own seed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they grew a lot of cabbages, and they sort of knew what would grow here without, I don't know how they knew what would grow here, but they
Well, the early colonists were from the Midwest, and so I'm sure that they were well-versed in which were the cool season vegetables, and they probably started with those. You know, potatoes was another staple in the early gardens that we have here in the state.
Well, there was carrots, potatoes, of course, rhubarb, but I don't think anybody was thinking of rhubarb as a local plant. It was a weed, right?
I don't know, but one of the first entrepreneurial projects of the colonists that came into the Mat-Su Valley was to bring in raspberries.
Oh.
So, you know, one of the farmers, rather than, you know, planting an agronomic crop, he started out growing raspberries that he could sell.
So raspberries were imported? I didn't know that.
We have a wild raspberry, but the horticultural varieties that we grow have a much bigger berry, and I don't know if they're more flavorful or not. I guess we'd have to do a taste test.
Well, I have neighbors with raspberries on both sides, and they are raspberry lovers, and I am not. And the little raspberries, they invade and invade. I spent half my summer ripping out, you know. But, okay, we'll get back to that in a minute. But I want to get down to the basics first. And, Julie, you are the person to ask. You need soil. You need heat. You need – what about water? What are your basic needs for an Alaska garden?
Well, I think you've covered them all. But it really all starts with the soil. And to have wonderful, delicious vegetables all year long, you have to have a soil that is conducive to plant growth and full of nutrients.
So certain types of soil would be the ones more beneficial for, say, certain vegetables. Take certain soils, is that it?
Well, you know, in Alaska, geologically speaking, our soils are very young. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you clear a forested area and go in to try to grow something, you need to add a lot of fertilizers, either organic or inorganic, because there aren't too many nutrients in our local soils. And when the gardener, you know, has a load of topsoil delivered, or, you know, or goes and buys a bucket or a bag of local topsoil, the soil, too, is low in nutrients. So you really have to build up the soil, and every year, you know, just add more organic materials, more soil amendments that will, you know, support the growth of your vegetable garden not only this year, but next year as well.
So, but those soils can be
amended.
Amended,
yeah,
right.
Amended.
That's the word I'm looking for. I went to the Natural Resource Conservation Service website, and they have no fewer than 8 types of soil, and that they categorize all this stuff. And I thought, wow, that's a lot. I didn't even know we had all that many soils in Alaska. We are really looking at the tomato question. I see the call boards are really lighting up with tomato questions. And so how about tomatoes? You have to have a greenhouse? You have to have a greenhouse? What about growing?
Well, I want to tell you my tomato story.
Okay,
first.
Then we'll go to the phones.
Okay.
Hang on there,
so,
guys.
I moved to Alaska in August of 1984, and we had a killing frost that week, and I could tell I was not going to get any vine-ripened tomatoes. So I asked my husband, who is still back in Wisconsin, to send me some tomatoes. And being as economical as he is, he sent them, I don't know, parcel post or something, and I had tomato soup. So I lived in a really windy part of town. I was up on hillside and didn't have a greenhouse. So I started growing the tomato varieties that you could grow inside in containers.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to do that with one of those upside down jobbies. Let's take a break. Let's go to the phones. Terry, you're on air. Thanks for your patience. Terry, you're gone. Okay, let's go to... Hi.
Hello?
Bill. Oh, Bill, you're there. Hi. My eyes, I can't read. Hi, Bill.
Yes, my question is about tomatoes in a greenhouse.
Okay.
My wife and I are having a disagreement on watering. I think if it's 90 degrees in the greenhouse, I can use hose water, which is pretty cold. If it's during the midday, I wouldn't do it in the evening. So is it too shocking?
I don't know. You're going to have to set up your own study. It's going straight onto the roots, and I don't, you know, if you would just try, you know, half your crop one way and half a crop the other way, but the cold water is not going to have a chance to warm up before it hits the roots. So I don't know if it's going to make any difference in growth or not, but that's, you know, you bring up a really good point, and that is that the temperature of the water for these warm season plants like tomatoes does make a difference.
That really does? I didn't know that either.
Yeah, that's why, you know, in a greenhouse, some people will have just a garbage can full of water to raise the temperature. Oh. Or outside, dedicated gardeners, you know, put a tank up on top of a building so that the water will have a chance to heat up before they use it for watering their plants.
So Bill there, what are you going to do? You're going to do half
and
half?
Well, I think I'm going to have to use the tank water over there. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I want to know whose idea that was, yours or your wife's?
Well, my wife says I should, dip the watering can in the tank and water them all. But if I have the hose and it's hot, I figured it would be okay. But maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. I'd like to see you do it both ways so that you'll really know next year.
Well, I'll try and encourage someone else to.
What kind of tomatoes are you growing?
Actually, it's the second year for Brandywines.
Okay.
I'm very surprised as they came along. Last year was a great year, and we got over 120. We're up in Trapper Creek, but it was a nice year. I'm hoping for just as nice a year this year.
Okay, thanks for calling, Bill. Brandywines, let's get to the varieties of tomatoes, of which there are more than I can count on my fingers and toes. And I love the names. I love the names. Mama Mia, Lemon Boy, Celebrity, of course, Beefsteak, Red Robin. You have some container varieties you've given me, Julie. They have names like Gem State and Florida Petite. What are the better varieties to grow outdoors or indoors in Alaska?
Well, if we start with outdoors, Stupas, I think, is the best variety for outdoor growing, either, you know, in a container or in the ground. And, you know, it's kind of a crazy name. And it's a...
Like S-T-U-P-A?
Stupas, S-T-U-P-I-C-E.
Oh, okay.
So apparently it's an area in Eastern Europe. And that's where the name comes from.
They do well in Alaska? Any particular reason?
Well, they are a short-seasoned tomato variety that can grow at cooler temperatures. So there's that's probably the best. But I'm wondering if Glacier isn't going to come in as the contender because it's a tomato that I had the chance to taste for the first time last year. One of my colleagues grew it, and it was absolutely delicious. And it's supposed to be a tomato that will handle the temperatures getting down, you know, in the 40s, which most tomatoes don't like.
Oh, no. Well, let's remind our listeners again before we go take another phone call that this is a call-in show. And if you have any questions for our gardening expert here on tomatoes or other vegetables, call 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or 1-888-353-5752, or shoot us an email at hometownalaska@kska.org. And remember, all the information you need about today's show can be found at KSKA's own website. That's kska.org. Let's take another call. Hello, Robin.
Yeah, hi.
You're calling.
I have an actual non-tomato question.
Okay, go for it.
I did not have time to start my seedlings for my garden, my cabbage, my broccoli, my zucchini, my cucumber. And so I'm wondering, can I throw those seeds in the ground now and see results, or am I doomed to not have veggies?
Oh, you were not doomed at all. you know, of those that you mentioned, I think you're right on track for zucchini. You know, plant the seeds right in the ground. You know, the transplants that you could purchase from the store would only be about 3 weeks old.
Mm-hmm.
So you know you'll be a little bit later in terms of your harvest.
Uh-huh.
Broccoli, usually, broccoli and cabbage are grown from transplants that are started about 6 to 7 weeks before you would put them outside.
Yeah.
But last year, I started both from seed directly in the garden the second week in June.
Really,
and I was able to harvest broccoli and the cabbage. The cabbage never got thinned out, but it was delicious when it was young. In fresh salads, it was really sweet.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to continue to grow that just to use in salad mixes.
Yeah.
But not everything needs to go in as a transplant. Mm-hmm. All your leaf lettuces and gourmet greens like arugula and mizuna, they all should be started directly from seed in the ground. Kale should be started, too, from seed directly in the ground. That's the way you do carrots. That's the way you do radishes and turnips and peas and beans.
Yeah.
So there's only a few things that it's too late to start. Now, you can't plant tomatoes outside from seed, but you could start some tomatoes and grow them as a houseplant.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, I'll give it a try. I wanted to have some fresh. I like to do it on my own. I hate buying transplants.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I'm cheating.
Well, you know what? Some vegetables like cauliflower are so fussy that if you know they wilted, you know, in their little cell pack once or twice, they might head up prematurely.
Mm.
So if you can do your own seedlings, then you know what kind of care they've had.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll give it a try then. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling, Robin. Let's take another call. Line now. Oh, Emily. Hi, are you there?
Yeah.
You're on air.
I am an apartment dweller, and so I don't have a yard to garden in. Currently, what I have is some basil and some basically peas and spinach indoors. But I'm wondering what else can I do, and if you have any indoor gardening strategies.
Sure. How's the light, the natural light in your dwelling?
I have one south-facing window, but it's pretty limited real estate. Otherwise, I have a north-facing patio and it gets morning and night.
That's what's so great about Alaska is even on the north side, the sun will come around that direction, you know, during the growing months. Well, let's start with inside. Since your southern exposure is limited, I would plant some more basil. I don't even know how much you have, but I would plant some more basil, get some parsley, and then, you know, you can have guests over, you can go to the windowsill to harvest your parsley and your basil, and you can make pesto and put it in the blender, and voila, you know, you've harvested your meal from indoors. The peas are probably, I would suggest taking the peas outside. Okay. And they can be grown in 5-gallon buckets on the patio. But for the north side, it would be the leafy vegetables, you know, like I would try some leaf lettuce. And if you like mustard, that'll grow in very little light. And if you're able to water regularly, like every day after the plants get larger, you can just use one of those, you know, plastic flats that aren't only about 3 inches deep for some of the salad greens.
Oh, okay.
And then if you got window boxes, you'd have a little more leeway with some of your crops, and you could probably even do radishes in them.
Okay. Any other vegetables?
Well, the north side, it's the leafy greens that you've got for the house. You know, one summer I grew green beans on my windowsill because I lived on hillside and I didn't trust the summer. And I was able to pick a couple of meals from a window box of green beans in a south-facing window.
All right. Okay. That answer your question, Emily?
Anything over the winter?
Well, you can keep that basil growing over the winter. What I like to do, I guess I should be honest, is grow my vegetables until about Thanksgiving time, and then declare the season over, and then start again next spring. And I prefer to do that rather than, you know, keeping artificial lights going. But, you know, a green pepper or, well, even better yet, the hot peppers, they make lovely houseplants. And I've been able to grow them in a pot, you know, on my kitchen table and harvest, maybe only 3 peppers for the larger bell-sized peppers. But hot peppers make a lot of little peppers, and so they're pretty, too.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Emily. Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about tomatoes. You want them to be inside. You need to pay attention to the soil. You need to pay attention to the temperature of the water, and you need to pay attention to the type of tomato apparently hundreds of kinds of tomatoes. There's maybe 2 or 3 that actually thrive in Alaska.
Well, for outdoor growing, you know, you need to look for those that have cold-sounding names.
Yeah, you mentioned the Stupas.
I mentioned Stupas and Glacier. There are some that I have tried and I don't recommend anymore. Mm-hmm. So Subarctic Plenty, you know, I don't think they're worth eating. And Siberian, which was kind of, you know, 20 years the classic for people to try outside, I've never been very happy with how productive they are. But in talking to Joette Storm today, she's one of the master gardeners. Mm-hmm. I found a picture of a tomato that she had outside growing, and it's about 2.5-3 feet tall, and she bought it that way. So, you know, she bought it at the size where it's already producing fruit. And my colleague Marcy Johnson did this last year too, and you know, and I scoffed and said, "Oh, you know, that won't work. You know, you won't be able to harden it off, and it's too big." But both of these growers had great luck, produced a lot of tomatoes, and so I think that if you've got a warm enough location, just you know, if you buy big plants that are already starting to fruit, you'll get tomatoes, and they should keep producing throughout the summer. But it kind of goes against the grain of you know, what we were taught back in horticulture school.
I'll try to get this photo on our website after the show. It is a gorgeous tomato plant. By the way, all the information you will need on today's show is on the kska.org website. And Hometown Alaska is a call-in program, so if you'd like to ask a question of our gardening expert here, call 550-8433, 550-8433, or 1-888-353-5752, or send us an email at hometownalaska@kska.org. So let's talk a little bit more about the container varieties. You have some names you've given me here, Pixie and Toy Boy and Burpee Basket King. And I have to say, I did give that upside down tomato thing a shot last summer as a joke.
Yes.
And you will appreciate this as a gardener. I was trying to get some tomato seedlings growing. on my patio in the sun, and they all sort of got wizened and wilted and they sort of clunked. But about 2-3 weeks later, I looked down and one seed must have fallen into one of the potted flower plants. And here's this little seedling struggling up all night. It was out there for I don't know how long and all day. And it was this little thing, maybe no higher than my thumb. So I thought, great. And I had the upside down planter and I put it in there. And I could not believe my eyes. I kept it inside, but in 3 weeks, that tiny little, hardly longer than an inch seedling was this giant bushy thing. And I must have gotten lucky because it was a kind of cherry tomato. And it flowered, and I only put it outside twice because I figured it needed to be pollinated or something. And it gave me little fruits. I was astonished.
Well, you know, it would have done the same thing if you'd put it in a hanging basket and growing it upright. I'm glad you brought these upside down tomato containers up because I cannot believe how popular they've become. But if you noticed, you know, the tomatoes want to curve up because there's a hormone in that growing point that wants it to go up. So, if you hadn't started with such a small seedling, your cherry tomato might have, wanted to grow 6 feet tall, and it would have snapped off.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. Let's take one call before the break. Hi, Maria? Maria?
It's Mariah.
Mariah, like the wind. Yeah. You're on air.
Hi there. I wanted to ask you a question, a couple questions, actually. My husband and I have just, I don't know if you're familiar with polar baby tomatoes. And it's kind of basically a cherry tomato. And we've actually grown them off and on for the last 5 years outside, and they've been really great. I was wondering, it seems like something happened this year, and I'm not sure what we did or what we need to do, but we use a little tester, you know, one of those things with the little metal pokey thing that you test the soil to see how moist it is. It just to gauge the water moisture. And it's always worked in the past, but I just wondered what are the best characteristics for if we're giving too much or not giving enough, because it seems like the leaves are wrinkling up and dying off and the plant doesn't look as good as it should.
Okay, we've got a couple of things going on here. Do we have time to take them all or just time for part of them before the break, Ellen?
We have, just go ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
Go with the flow.
So when you water, you need to water thoroughly. That's the most important thing. And to use the moisture meter, I mean, you can use it, but you just have to use common sense too.
Okay.
So if it's reading that the soil's dry and you can see that it's not dry, I mean, you just need to calibrate it once in a while. But it's very important that the water goes all the way through the container. Now, or were these outside since they were the polar babies? Did you have them outside or were you growing them indoors?
Oh, yeah, we do. We've got some in a stand where they go up and down, which they seem to love that. And then we've got some in some planters.
Outside. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, the curling could be, just a varietal response. I haven't grown polar baby enough, to get a sense for what the foliage looks like. But the some tomatoes will cup up and some are just kind of curled down. The time to be when you really have to worry about it is when you're indoors, because there are a number of ways that you can have ethylene gas in the air, and it causes this curling and distortion of the leaves. So you can get that from a pilot light and the stove and a gas stove that's not working properly. You can get it if you've got a lot of ripening, fruit in the kitchen where you're growing the tomato.
What? We actually, the ones in the planters that I was asking about, we actually had those inside up until last week.
So they may straighten out for you.
Pardon?
They may, the new foliage might look, not be so curly.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, that's probably what was causing the leaf damage, or, you know, the leaf stuff. So, okay, well, I was just kind of, you know, trying to figure out what was going on there, because I was like, the ones that we already had outside were doing wonderfully.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, what was the ones that were inside that we brought outside, and why are the leaves crinkling up in green? it just was weird. So.
Okay, well, hopefully they'll straighten out for you.
Okay.
All righty. Oh, you know, I'm sorry. Can I ask you one more thing? How often do you suggest giving plant food to the tomato plant?
Well, tomatoes are really heavy feeders, and they will tell you when they're not getting enough nitrogen. The lower leaves start to turn pale green, and then they'll turn yellow. And you also see magnesium deficiency, and I call it window painting. You'll find it on the lower leaves, where the tissue and the leaves between the veins is yellow, but the veins are green, so it kind of looks like a checkerboard arrangement. And then I would guess that if you look at the tomatoes that you've got outside, that you're going to see some phosphorus deficiency. So if you turn the leaves and look at the underside, you'll see a purpling of the leaves. That's phosphorus deficiency. It's very common in tomatoes, and when the soil is cold, the tomatoes can't take up phosphorus, even if it's there. So, you know, if they're growing vigorously, you may need to fertilize once a week. If the temperatures are cool and they're not growing real fast, well, maybe you can skip that week. It just depends on your soil.
Okay. All right, I appreciate your time.
Thanks for calling, Mariah. Let's go to break, and we will get back to the phones after that. You're listening to Hometown Alaska.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen again to Hometown Alaska on KSKA, the show repeats tonight at 10. Remember, tonight's recorded rebroadcast will not be taking phone calls. Following this afternoon's broadcast, you can also find a copy of today's Hometown Alaska online at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Ellen Lockyer, and today my guest is Julie Riley, a master gardener and horticulturist with the Cooperative Extension Service. And we're talking about getting the most out of your home garden, your truck garden, your backyard garden, especially focusing on that rarity, homegrown tomatoes. So, Julie, we were going to talk a little bit about the container variety. You say you can grow tomatoes inside, outside. It helps to have them in a container. How about like a raised bed? Is that the same thing as a container or what?
Well, you know, when I talk about container tomatoes, I'm thinking about tomatoes that you grow in a pot like a houseplant. Or if you're outdoors, there would be no reason to grow these little tiny things that'll grow in a 6-inch pot. If you're going to go for outdoors, grow the larger tomato plants that will give you bigger fruit and be more productive. So, yes, a raised bed is a type of container. If it's not new, you'd have to warm up the soil by covering it with clear plastic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a trick. Well, let's go back to the phones. We got some people waiting. And Susan, you've been waiting a long time. Hi.
Hi, I wanted to ask about two things. Which herbs will overwinter, and also what kind of fertilizer to use on herbs?
Okay, well, we have quite a few herbs that overwinter, and I would invite you to come out to the Alaska Botanical Garden. And if you want to help plant the herb garden, where there are almost 100 different kinds of herbs, we're going to be out there Thursday and Friday. So, in terms of perennial plants, I guess it might be easier, you know, since there are so many herbs, for you to say, tell me what you're interested in,
well,
and
I'm
can tell you.
The basic ones, you know, the basic ones used in cooking, that's what I'm interested in, like thyme and sage and rosemary and, dill, and I know chives over winter.
Okay, well let's stop there.
Okay.
So rosemary is a tender perennial, and there is no chance that it's going to make it through the winter. So you can grow it outside, but you need to keep it in a pot, and you can sink the pot into the garden and then bring it in and grow it through the winter as a houseplant. And without any supplemental light, you can just, you know, snip off the straggly growth that you get in the wintertime, and then when the light turns around in February, it'll grow nicely for you again. Sage really is not perennial for us outside, and either is thyme. The most common thyme is English thyme, and sometimes called French thyme, but there is also a lemon thyme, which, you know, in our experiences out at the botanical garden, is the hardiest, the most winter hardy of the times. There are variegated forms of lemon thyme, and, you know, there are some that are plain green, but they are very nice. They're good with fish, and they are more likely to overwinter. You know, the thymes don't like it real wet either, so make sure that the soil is well drained and that you don't, you know, position it near the...
But then what kind of fertilizer, both for, I always do a batch in a planter as well as try to do them outside, but I've got a new spot I thought might be better because it's really south-facing. But what kind of fertilizer?
Okay, well, in a container, you're going to need, you know, more fertilizer than in the ground,
mm-hmm.
You know, especially if you've got the herbs packed in there. Do you add any fertilizers to the potty mix before you put your plants in?
Well, I use that stuff that the Miracle-Gro putty mix. It supposedly already has it in there.
Well, it's just got a tiny bit in. You are going to have to fertilize. Did you? You know, I would suggest fertilizing when you put the plants in the container.
Okay.
And most herbs are not real heavy feeders. The mints require a lot of fertilizer, and so does Angelica. But some of the others you can grow quite lean. Dill is the herb of the year this year, and when you put in plants, sometimes they'll, you know, start to flower up, you know, early, prematurely, if they've been too stressed. If you fertilize them too much, if they weren't stressed, you know, then they might end up being, you know, 4 feet tall, which might outgrow your container. So
okay,
if you haven't bought the plants yet, I'd go from seed.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, mm-hmm. Susan. Let's take one more call. Hello?
Hello?
Megan, you've been patient. Hi, what's your question?
Oh, thank you. You know, I wanted to ask about potatoes. I normally buy the potatoes in Homa to plant, but this year I didn't go. And I want to know two things. One, whether you know a place in town that I could get good potatoes that does well in Alaska, and what type of potatoes. I live out in the Rabbit Creek area, so the only thing I can grow are potatoes because the rabbits and the moose will eat anything else I grow.
Wow. Well,
so
unfortunately,
I'll take the answer off the air if you like.
Okay. Well, this year there's... unfortunately, a shortage of seed potato. So it might be difficult to find seed potatoes. And I know some of the major suppliers are currently out. There is a map that lists some of the smaller greenhouses and nurseries that you can get online. It's called the Garden Snaps Map. And I would suggest calling around to see who might have seed potatoes left. What I don't want you to do is use the potatoes that you purchase from the grocery store, because it's important that the seed that you use has been certified to not have some of the really serious diseases that you know, could cause harm to our commercial potato crop. So if you just can't find anything locally, I don't know if you know, some of the online seed houses would still have potatoes left or not. We're a little bit later than the rest of the lower 48, so it might be hard to find them. So I would check with some of the smaller greenhouses and nurseries, and I would wish you good luck.
Okay, thanks for calling, Macon. Well, you know, there's been a lot of talk, Julie, over the last couple of years about Alaska's food supply. If there were a disaster of some kind where we were cut off from the rest of the country, there would be maybe a three-week supply up here. I keep hearing that, and of course the time period keeps changing. But people are being encouraged to grow their own, and people are very interested in these locally grown produce suppliers, the community-supported gardens. And there's quite a few of them now in the Anchorage area. How can people really get on this particular bandwagon if they're not really good gardeners? It's a lot of work. Having a good garden. It takes several years to get a good garden plot really at the point where it is productive, would you say, or not?
Well, it's probably, easier to buy things like potatoes and carrots and, store them into the winter if you don't have a lot of space, if you're a small urban gardener. But you have to have proper storage conditions. So there has been a big increase in the interest of people wanting to grow their own vegetables. And there's also been an increase in root cellaring.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can't be a condo dweller and have room to put up your own root cellar. And you may not, have a place to, keep these root crops cool but not freezing. So I guess one other option that you didn't mention would be to go to a U-Pick type of farm and learn how to can or mm-hmm. freeze. And that way, you could purchase the vegetables, in quantity, which might be at a lower price than you would get from the farmers markets.
Well, I the U-Pick idea would be good for me. But I do love to garden, and I think it's the kind of activity that it's so appealing to all ages, and especially women seem to really get into it. And I have some other tips here. I was browsing the net, before I went on air, and there's a lot of sites dedicated to tomatoes, and here's one. It says, get this. If you plant, where is it? Oh, plant tomatoes in the end of May, and it has to be, warm enough. But it talks about shaking the blossoms to help pollinate them. What would you say to that?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. You don't need the you don't need the bees and insects to pollinate tomatoes. They are self-fruitful. You don't need this transfer of pollen. So it's been determined that the middle of the day, well, at noon, has been a good time to pollinate. And commercial operations will have a little vibrating machine, that they'll put on the stem and it'll go and wiggle the plant a little bit, and it produces a higher percentage of fruit set.
Hmm.
So, if you're growing your tomatoes inside or in a greenhouse and don't have good airflow, jiggle that plant every time you walk by it.
Okay, yeah, so shake the plant slightly every time you walk by, because they can be wind pollinated. And then we carry a hormone called Get Set for Tomatoes to spray on the blooms to stimulate fruit setting.
Well, I was taught that the blossom set products really didn't work. And so I was taught that 30 years ago, and so I've never really tried them.
Okay. And second tip is your soil should be lush and fertile. Building a good soil is the most important thing you can do to have vigorous, healthy plants. Dig the bed deeply, and then it pushes a couple of products, but I won't mention them. So I read an article in the Alaska Science Journal written in 1988. This article stated that it is impossible to ripen tomatoes outside on the Kenai Peninsula. Remember, this is 1988. What about now? I mean, one of the few benefits, I guess, of climate change is that, I mean, it's like 85 degrees on the back of my house, just the southern part of my house, the last few days.
Yeah, it all depends on the summer. You know, the summer we only had 2 days above 70 in Anchorage. I don't know how many days above 70 the Kenai Peninsula had, but that was definitely not a tomato year. Last year, over in Mountain View, there's a refugee garden, and they must have put in 12 stupas tomato plants. And those plants were beautiful. They were taller than any tomato plants I've ever seen. They were almost 4 feet tall, and they were loaded with flowers all season long. But we never got a single tomato. Hmm. And I think that the night temperatures were too cool.
Right.
So not only do you have to worry about daytime temperatures, if the night's temperatures, you know, drop too cool, you're not going to get good fruit set. And tomatoes really would like it to stay in the 50s at night, and that seldom happens here, you know.
How about bringing a plant in and out? Does that stress it, or the changes in temperature? If you put it outside during the day, bring it in at night.
Well, I'd, you know, get a big container, put it on wheels. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a garage, you can just wheel it in and out, mm-hmm. you know, especially if it's got good sun exposure. I bet you'd get some vine-ripened tomatoes that way.
Well, I still think it's the greenhouse thing. My next-door neighbor has a little greenhouse, and she gets her – I see them on her kitchen window still as late as February. She starts growing them indoors, like, in February, and then puts them in the greenhouse, I guess, in May. And she gets tomatoes to die for. They are killer tomatoes.
Well, I think we have more greenhouses than any other state just because we want to grow tomatoes and cucumbers. But there are a couple of other tricks that you can try outside, and that's to use either clear plastic or floating row cover.
And let's describe what you have here. I thought it was sort of a bridal veil, but it's this white diaphanous stuff.
Okay, so that's a spun polyester fabric that would be like what you would use it's like interfacing that you would use in a shirt collar. Mm-hmm. And there's a second product that I brought to show you that is a plastic with very small pinpricks through, so that on a sunny day when it's warm, the temperatures don't get up above 100 on you, because the tomatoes don't like to set fruit when temperatures get above 85 degrees. But you can, you know, just take a tomato cage and you can wrap these fabrics around the cage, or you can use clear plastic and make a little mini greenhouse for individual plants, you know, if you can't build one.
I've tried that. It did not work out too well.
Well, it does. It can if you've got the right variety and you've got the right summer.
Because I feel sometimes when it gets too hot, the little greenhouse, it'll make the plant, the leaves get burned.
Yeah. That's why using this floating row cover, you don't have to worry about it getting too hot. And
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that with the plastic, if you leave, you know, about a foot on the top of it so that you can open it up during the day and then close it down at night, you know, just stuff it back in. And I have had gardeners that have been very successful. I mean, it's not like, you know, growing tomatoes outside in the Midwest, but for us, you know, we can get excited about a vine-ripened tomato.
Let's take another call. Hello, is Saskia?
Hi there. Yeah, it's Saskia.
Saskia.
And I just wanted to let your listeners know about a new service that I'm offering this summer to help people design, install, and maintain their edible gardens.
Okay.
And we also have workshops for people if they want to come and learn how to do it themselves.
Why don't you send us an email at hometownalaska@kska.org with that information, and we will put it on our website, okay?
Okay, that would be wonderful.
Thanks, Saskia. Oh, go ahead.
Well, Saskia, I was just going to say, you've got a great kind of a hybrid between a greenhouse and a large coal frame.
I do.
So what kind of tomatoes do you have going?
I've got all different kinds. I definitely have stupas, which I also do outside. And I've got Cherokee Purple, Brandywine, and a lot of different cherries. So, and I've been very successful with it. I can post a picture of my cold frame on the website as well.
Yeah, it's a great design. That would be easier for people to make than erecting a full greenhouse.
Hey, yeah, let's talk a little bit about cold frames. What's the difference between a cold frame and, say, a raised bed? What?
A cold frame is enclosed,
mm-hmm.
and I mean you could put a cover over a raised bed,
mm-hmm.
and I mean the classic cold frame was just made with windows, you know, old windows that you have to raise up.
Mm-hmm. Or you could, I built them, yeah.
Yeah. So the one that Saskia have is very, it's about as tall as we are, and so that there's room for the tomatoes to grow, and it faces south, and it's, there's room for, you don't go into it, and otherwise it's like a little mini greenhouse.
Okay, so where are you located, Saskia? Anchorage?
Yeah, I'm in Midtown Anchorage.
Ah, Midtown Gardener. That would be like me. Good. Okay.
Well, we're off to a good start with all these sunny days.
Yeah, thanks for calling then. Send us that picture. We'll put it on the website of the cold frame. Okay? Thanks.
Yep.
So we only have a few more minutes left, and I was going to get to, what is the deal with, I read this stuff about like recycling now. We're in an age when everybody's really trying to recycle, and I read some article about using your old shower curtain, to cover your garden bed. You see that a lot, the black plasticky stuff, and then they have holes poked in it, and the little seedlings are coming up through the. Is that more trouble than it's worth, or is it effective?
Well, black plastic or vinyl would absorb heat and would actually warm up the soil a little bit more than if you hadn't covered the soil with it. But what you really need is, a clear plastic or vinyl to really make the difference. Unfortunately, weeds grow underneath there too. But one recycling tip that I like for an urban garden is to use pieces of old carpeting in between the rows to keep the weeds down. Or even newspapers make a great urban mulch if you can lay them down, 3 to 5 layers thick, and then just weed between the rows, and they break down, and you don't have to actually shred them and put them in the compost pile that way. You can do in-ground composting.
Well, you said mulch. You can make mulch out of newspapers. What exactly is mulch? I use brown old leaves and stuff.
Yeah, mulch. Mulch is a material that is used to cover the surface of the soil. So mm-hmm. it can be organic or inorganic. So we were talking about, the plastic mulches versus you're talking about organic mulches. So they can be used to help retain moisture and prevent weeds. And then in the winter, we use a different type of mulch, a winter protective mulch that keeps our perennials that might not be as hardy as we'd like from winter killing.
So, do the plants seem to derive nutrients from the mulch, or is the mulch mainly to keep them warm?
Well, the mulch is the clear plastic would keep the roots warmer. The organic mulches actually keep the soil a little bit cooler, and as those organic materials break down, yes, they would provide nutrients for the plants.
Mm-hmm.
So there are. Benefits for each type of mulch, and it's a great technique to help control weeds, and we don't get a lot of rain this time of year, so anything that you can do to keep the soil from drying out so quickly also helps.
Okay, I'll tell you a trick, a tip. One of my tips, mine are experimental, but I make my own compost and have for years and experimented with it. And I make it, I don't use kitchen materials. I only use yard waste. And I'm very, very careful about the percentages of nitrogen and carbon. And it works, man. But you have to be very patient because, it takes years in Alaska rather than. I've made it in a garbage can in California, and in 1 year I got beautiful stuff. But in Alaska, if you're outdoors, it freezes up all winter. So, it takes a while. But
It does freeze up all winter, but we, you know, we do have composters that make 2 and 3 batches a summer.
Mm-hmm.
So they pay attention to the carbon-nitrogen ratio like you do, but then they've got shredders that can break down the particle size, and then if the pile is turned enough and you pay attention to moisture, the composting process happens a lot faster than if you just wait.
I just wait. I'm a patient person, and I don't have a shredder, but I've put it on certain, because I have a lot of raised beds, so I put it on, you know, I can tell I'll put it on one bed of rhubarb and not on the other, and the one in a week, it just goes ka-ching. And so last fall, before the snow, I threw a whole bunch of my homemade compost on one flower bed and not the other. And those weeds came back. They came back so strong on the one that that I put the compost on. I mean, I have dandelions like
six
feet tall.
Yeah.
But, so sometimes you have to watch what you do. And how about the coffee grounds thing? Now, I've been known since I was a little kid. Some gardeners throw coffee grounds on their plants. When I was a little kid, the lady across the street always did that, and I'd forgotten about that. And it popped back into my head this winter, so I started saving up my coffee grounds. And then I found a book, an old book at a garage sale. And there it was. It said, you know, coffee grounds will change the acidity of the soil. Used coffee grounds, not new ones.
We've got a better use for those. I think it is a better idea to put the coffee grounds into your compost pile. I mean, you can certainly mix a small amount into the soil.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, I tried to use them as a mulch, you know, thinking that, you know, they would look like the soil because they're brown and, you know, maybe it would help keep weeds down, or maybe the slugs wouldn't like it, but they just, you know, kind of got crusty. I mean, over time, they would have broken down. So it just took more time to actually, you know, put them around the plants and between the rows than it would have if I had just composted with them or dug some in before I planted.
Mm-hmm. I mixed them with eggshells. You eat your breakfast, you have your coffee, and you take the coffee grounds and the eggshells. You put them in a container and you let them build up for a couple of weeks, and I throw them in the garden. And I'm going to see how that works.
Well, that sounds like a great morning ritual. My ritual is to give my worms the coffee grounds, and they are highly caffeinated. They just love coffee grounds, and they also like eggs too.
Worms, do you have them in your house, or do you
I've got a worm composter, and coffee grounds is the main component of what I feed
them.
Really?
That's a wonderful idea, and I'm happy your worms are enjoying their lattes. Well, it looks like we'll be running out of time here pretty quick. And I did want to thank you so much for coming by and sharing your expert knowledge with us. And I think that I'd like to encourage everybody to get out in the sun and grow up a green plant. You know, there's some areas of the world where, like the Arctic, where growing a green plant is a big deal. It just doesn't happen, you know, unless you husband it inside. You know, I have friends in Kodiak who have amazing tomatoes, but in their living room. Their living room is full of these huge pots full of vegetables. Okay, folks, you've been listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Ellen Lockyer. And our guest today is Julie Riley, our horticulturist and master gardener. And next week, join us for Tika Ballas, when she'll be talking about beekeeping in Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated News and Public Media. An archived copy of today's program, additional information, and links to all the websites mentioned on today's show are available online at kska.org. Send us your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to talk about at Hometown Alaska, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. This is KSKA Anchorage.